The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
A four-day work week with no loss of pay. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders would like to see it happen. More steel from Mexico hitting the United States. What some lawmakers are doing about it. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, March 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Two guests on the show today, longtime supporters of America's Workforce. We're going to start things off with Jeffrey Stouffer from the American Legion magazine. Legion.org is the website. And this is the time of the month where we preview the upcoming month's edition. That would be the April edition. And the first story we're going to talk about is titled Training for Life. It's authored by Henry Howard, who we featured on the show back in September during Suicide Prevention Month. And this story is about veteran suicide. One of the most harmful myths about suicide is that talking about it plants the idea or raises the risk of a suicide attempt, leading many to think that silence is the best option. Henry points out nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the American Legion's Be the One mission wants people to know that it's okay not to be okay, and encourages people to engage with a veteran whose life might be at risk. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this article and what they have done here. They've linked up with Columbia University, and one of the people there is Kelly Posner, a psychiatry professor at Columbia and lead scientist for some new research on veteran suicide. The protocol has been called the gold standard because it's the first use of science-based thresholds in predicting who is at risk to attempt suicide. This is really amazing, really amazing. And Henry, I got to thank him for coming to the table with this today. In fact, in the magazine, I have a preview copy. There's a bunch of bullet points on what to ask a veteran at risk. And I'm looking at six different bullet points, which we'll get into on the show today. The second story is titled Seeds of Hope. And this is about a national commander for the American Legion joining the Department of Latin America Legionnaires to deliver food, treats, toys, and smiles to villagers in Guatemala. Why are they there? Well, it's all because of what happened. My gosh, this was back in 2018 when a volcano erupted. And right now, they think at least 700 people were never found. Maybe it's close to 1,000, but there's people still being affected about what happened in 2018, and the Legionnaires are trying to help out. And lastly, Alan Dowd, I love this writer. He did a great story titled Lessons from Ukraine. Russia's attempted conquest is a harsh reminder about the cost of a great power war. And, you know, we haven't heard too much in the mainstream media about what has happened as far as casualties go. I mean, there's been some speculation, but Alan really did a deep dive into this, and he found out that the Russian military has lost approximately 120,000 killed in action in 2 years of war, just in 2 years. By way of comparison, the USSR lost about 15,000 in Afghanistan, and that was in a decade. Russia also lost over 2,700 tanks, over 5,000 armored vehicles and 135 helicopters. As far as Ukraine goes, we're looking at about 70,000 troops and 100,000 civilians killed. Ukraine also lost 742 tanks, 1,600 armored vehicles, 80 fixed-wing aircraft, and 28 warships. So Jeff is going to run down that article written by Alan Dodd, the lessons from Ukraine. Complete updates from the American Legion at legion.org. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show. On behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans, Rich serves as an executive director. RetiredAmericans.org is a website. He's got plenty to talk about today. Number one, the Alliance just released their 2023 congressional voting record, which scored each U.S. senator and representative on critical retirement security issues. 44 members of the U.S. Senate and 210 members of the House earned perfect 100% scores. 23 senators earned scores of 0%. Who are they? Rick Scott of Florida, who's been talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare. Also, Ted Cruz. Also, we should point out, 174 House members earned a score of 0%. So Rich is going to run that down. Speaking of Social Security and Medicare, there was a broadcast recently on CNBC where Donald Trump said if he becomes president, he's going to look at cutting Social Security and Medicare. And I'll tell you, that started a firestorm, because when you start talking about Social Security and Medicare and cuts, oh my God, you got a voting population that is going to be really, really angry. So we'll get into that and more with Rich Fiesta as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Senator Bernie Sanders held a hearing yesterday on a bill that he introduced to reduce the standard U.S. work week to 4 days without a loss of pay. The bill is titled the 32-Hour Work Week Act. It would reduce the standard work week from 40 to 32 hours over the span of 4 years, including lowering the maximum hours required for overtime compensation for non-exempt employees. It would also require overtime pay at time and a half for workdays that last more than 8 hours, and overtime pay that would pay workers double their regular pay if their workday is longer than 12 hours. There's a lot of people that fit into that category. A press release on the bill described it as an important step toward ensuring workers share in increasing productivity and economic growth driven by technology. Sanders said in a statement, moving to a 32-hour work week with no loss of pay is not a radical idea. Today, American workers are over 400% more productive than they were back in the 1940s. And yet, millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages than they were decades ago, and that's got to change. The financial gains from the major advancements in artificial intelligence, automation, new technology, must benefit the working class, not just corporate CEOs and wealthy stockholders on Wall Street, said Sanders. It's time to reduce the stress level in our country and allow Americans to enjoy a better quality of life. It is time for a 32-hour work week with no loss in pay. In a news release on the bill, Sanders cites studies that say although weekly wages for average American workers are lower than they were 50 years ago when you adjust for inflation, CEOs make hundreds of times more than what their workers earn. Yes, much more. AFL-CIO does a great job on this with their PayWatch website, and that should be updated shortly. Sanders went out to say it's time that working families, not just CEOs, are able to benefit from increased productivity so they can enjoy more leisure time, family time, education, and cultural opportunities, and then you throw in less stress. He also pointed out to other countries that have reduced their work weeks, such as France, Norway, and Denmark, as well as four-day work week pilot programs that found increased productivity and satisfaction among workers. By the way, a number of people were at that hearing yesterday, including Sean Fain, president of the United Auto Workers, and you will recall when he was bargaining with the Big Three last fall, 32 hours for a work week was on the table. So he got their attention. He didn't get it, but at least he got their attention on the issue. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Senator Tom Cotton, who's a Republican out of Arkansas, introduced bipartisan legislation this week to stop the increase of Mexican steel imports. Senator Brown says the Mexican government has been violating an agreement going back to 2019 with the U.S. and threatening steelworkers in various states. He pointed out when Mexico breaks the rules they agreed to, the administration needs to hold them accountable, and this bill would do just that. The chairman and president of Cleveland-Cliffs added that Mexico has failed to live up to its agreement. Lorenzo Gonsalves said when the United States in 2019 exempted Mexico from the Section 232 steel tariffs, Mexico agreed that it would not allow for exports from Mexico into the U.S. to surge above historic levels. Well, not to my surprise, Mexico has failed to live up to that agreement and has taken advantage of its favored trade relationship. That's the CEO of Cleveland-Cliffs. This is called the Stop Mexico Steel Surge Act, and it would actually reinstate the tariffs, the 232 tariffs on Mexican steel imports at 25% for no less than a year, and then give the president authority to impose additional quotas on specific products if needed. Again, this piece of legislation has bipartisan support, so there's a pretty good chance it's going to move forward. Senator Brown hopes the bill will compel the administration to take action and enforce the agreement with Mexico, preserving the domestic steel industry. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Jeff Stoffer on behalf of the American Legion coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form and a local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper will be joining us on the show next Tuesday here on America's Workforce. Right now, let's go to Indianapolis and join one of our longtime regulars. Jeff, I was counting the years. You've been on this show for 15 years. Can you believe that?
Right. I think that's right. 2009, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 15 years. Jeff serves as the Media and Communications Division Director for the American Legion magazine. This is the time of the month where we preview the next month, which will be April. Hard to believe we're going into April already. And this is a heck. They're always good issues. Always good issues. And we're going to start things off with a piece by Henry Howard on veteran suicide. This is really an incredible story here, and it's all about the American Legion and Columbia University uniting to educate Legion families on science-based protocol to save veterans who are at risk. We're using science here. Jeff, talk to me about this. This is amazing.
Yeah, this is not the first time that the American Legion has allied with Columbia University. As you know from earlier shows, we've talked about how it was Columbia University's research and epidemiology that basically proved that Agent Orange was causing all these adverse health effects on veterans from the Vietnam War. Now we have, you know, turned a page and a new era is upon us. We're back with Columbia University and a newly, sort of approved and on its way project, the Columbia University Lighthouse Project, which identifies risks of a veteran for suicidality, thinking and risk identification and that sort of thing. More than that, it goes into the steps that someone can take to, prevent that. And the whole point, one of the points of this is that I think that is important is now we certainly do encourage, you know, the seeking of mental health professionals when, you know, the situation arises, but so often the suicidal or the veteran at risk is not going to necessarily engage the mental health professional, more likely to engage a peer, a veteran, a fellow veteran. And that's what the American Legion's Be the One program is what it's all about. It's about peer-to-peer support. But the question is, what do you do? And this protocol that Columbia University has put together, as you said earlier, is science-based. It is has a great performance record on, you know, preventing suicidality, preventing repeat, situations, and has, you know, good data behind it. It's been an award-winning program that has done amazing things to reduce suicide. But what we're doing right now is a virtual and in-person training program. You can learn more about it at legion.org, betheone.org/training, where we're doing virtual training programs with Columbia, and hundreds of people have already signed up and done it and are doing it, and more are coming in because people want to help.
I'm looking at that page right now. That's page 21 in the April edition, betheone.org/training. Okay, you mentioned a lot of people are involved in the training. How long will this take? Can you predict on when this is going to be rolled out? Can we get into that at this stage?
Yeah, it's rolled out now, and it's rolling out now. We're scheduling and have already started to do some of the training programs virtually and in person. And there, and it's like I say, there's many. We have noticed a big uptick in the number of people who are registered to do it. You know, it's the big question about, you know, I fear that my friend or my fellow veteran is at risk for suicide. What do I do? And the hardest thing to take on with a delicate subject like that is, I mean, do I address it directly? Do I kind of, you know, it's one of those questions that is very difficult to ask. And Columbia has a protocol with the key questions that you have to ask. And it's basically a six-step process primarily. And then the training itself, which includes they go over the protocol, the steps, the step-by-step instructions about how to ask a veteran and how to be direct about it, you know, because that's what Columbia's research has shown, is a direct approach works better and works most often. And this work then leads to in the training, they do a role-playing exercise so that there's actual opportunities for those who are in the training to kind of deal with a suicidal situation so that they know what to expect. And, you know, one thing about people in the military is if they're trained to do something, they generally know they generally succeed at it.
Mm-hmm. Just to run down some of the questions that Jeff brought up. Number one, have you wished you were dead? Or wish you could go to sleep and not wake up? Number two, have you actually had any thoughts of killing yourself? Number three, have you been thinking about how you might do this? Number four, have you had these thoughts and had some intention of acting on them? Number five, have you started to work out or work out the deaths of how to kill yourself? Do you intend to carry this plan out? This is real, real, real pointed. And it goes contrary. I like what Henry Howard, what he did to start out the article. I was mentioning this at the top of the show about the myths of suicide. So if a lot of people, and I would imagine it's still prevalent today, they don't want to bring this up because if they bring up suicide, they think that then that's going to trigger something. And I guess that's still pretty much out there today, isn't it?
Yeah, that is kind of the approach that Columbia's research has found, is that if you take it on directly, you know, it sort of unravels the thinking of the veteran at risk. So, I mean, but that approach has infinitely better or statistically better results than not approaching it directly and not asking directly these at-risk questions. And that's the protocol is very, very specific and very clear. And the training takes 90 minutes. And, you know, the cover is 90 minutes to save a life. Well, you know, are you willing to do that?
Right.
And I think that's I think our veteran members who really want to make an impact on the high rate of veteran suicide certainly do want to make that impact and do want to take that training and do want to do it. And so you can learn more about it on our website and sign up for our training program and follow the Columbia protocol. But Columbia is a very, very respected institution in this field. And I think it's going to be, you know, the more people we get trained to handle this, at least we have a consistent way of doing it. And it's
sure.
And science proven.
Let's give that website out again. It's betheone.org/training. betheone.org/training. And just some of the numbers here to wrap up this story. In the United States in 2021, there were 48,000 deaths by suicide, 1.7 million attempts to die by suicide, and 12.3 million adults who seriously considered a suicide attempt. And this has just exploded, especially after the pandemic here. Training for Life, got to check that out. Let's move on to Seeds of Hope here. And this story takes us to Guatemala, where some villagers are still suffering from a volcano. Talk to me about this one, Jeff.
Well, this is a very, very poor part of Central America in the remote mountain country. in Guatemala, and in 2018, the Fuego volcano, you know, most people probably never heard of it and never even heard of this area, but it blew, and, you know, this 700 degrees Celsius pyroclastic flow, it's like a big, heavy, hot mud flow, went through a village and literally melted it. They melted an entire village, and there may have been 700,000 people killed, but there's almost nothing left of it. And some of the surrounding villages, those who survived went there. Some of the surrounding villages were just as bad off. These people struggle every day to put food on the table, to live. They're not very, very, a very, very low income, poor people who, and with great needs, and trying to, there's a lot more at work here than just, you know, providing relief supplies, which the American Legion in Guatemala and, you know, all over the world in our American Legion Department of Latin America. It's really interesting about our Department of Latin America, about how their prime, one of their big missions, every single one of the posts from Puerto Vallarta to all over Mexico and Central America, where we have many American Legion posts, they work diligently to supply Mexico City. They provide support for children in need. There's the one school in Mexico City, I think, where we have a program that where the Legion supports a school for blind little children in Mexico City. That's what they do. They keep their school going with all food and repairs and all of that sort of thing that, you know, that no one else is paying for and no one else is providing. So that it's filling a real need. And what the American Legion National Commander in January went on three of these relief trips with our Department of Latin America Legionnaires to, you know, literally to provide them hope that, you know, someone cares, and that this is life-saving and life-changing hope, because they're feeding them, they're bringing, you know, basic supplies that cost less than $15 per family, like sugar, oatmeal, black beans, rice, salt, coffee, chow mein noodles. They have all, and then laundry soap, very importantly, it was balls of laundry soap so that they could wash their clothes. These people are in great need. Very often, it is in the case of this, the one village that they visited, it was, you know, a single mother with some children. And one of the things that the PNC, the Guatemalan Policía Nacional Civil, did was they used that opportunity with the Legion to share with those families new laws that are really clamping down on spousal abuse and domestic abuse. So that, you know, the women there understand that they have recourse in the event that they are abused or whatever. But at the end of the day, this brought smiles onto faces in a place of the world that very few people really even know exists, nor do they have any idea what kind of awful tragedy they have faced since this volcano. I mean, this was 6 years ago, and they're still struggling to rebuild or to try to restore themselves. It's 7,800 feet above sea level. They're up dirt roads that are barely passable. And these people who live up there are trying their best every day simply to put food on the table and to try to survive. So the American Legion has a long history of helping families in all countries, people who are in need. That's what we do at the local base, on the local basis, all across the United States and beyond, is to, you know, provide important emergency assistance or relief assistance. You know, veterans want more than anything to help others and to be that person, be that support mechanism. And this is, April is Children and Youth Month in the American Legion, where we are, this is what our April issue is kind of built on. And so we thought this was an important story to show the American Legion doing what it does best to assist children and youth.
Jeff Stouffer, on behalf of the American Legion, legion.org for complete updates. We'll continue with him. We're going to talk about the war in Ukraine. Later in the show, Rich Fiesta, on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans, will be joining us back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Alliance for American Manufacturing is a nonprofit, nonpartisan partnership formed back in 2007 by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers. Their mission is simple: strengthen American manufacturing and create new private sector jobs through smart public policies. Key word there is smart. We need to be smarter than ever in today's highly competitive world. The Alliance for American Manufacturing believes that an innovative and growing manufacturing base is vital to America's economic and national security, as well as providing good jobs for future generations. Good jobs today, good jobs tomorrow. Good American jobs. Find out more at AmericanManufacturing.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org is their website. Let's go back to our live line and button things up with Jeff Stoffer on behalf of the American Legion. This is the time we preview the next month's edition. Great story here, The Lessons from Ukraine. Alan Dowd is the author. And what this shows right off the bat is the losses, and they are monumental. Jeff, I'm going to let you pick it up from there. Go ahead, brother.
Right. That's but Alan's piece here on Lessons from Ukraine is sort of the way in which warfare is evolving and has evolved, and what we've been able to learn from what the Russia-Ukraine war. And now that we're entering into the third year of it, and it's just the losses are immense. You know, the Russian military has lost about 120,000 killed in action in just after 2 years. It was the it's comparatively, the USSR lost only 15,000 in Afghanistan in an entire decade. So in a very short period of time, many, many casualties. And then you look at the Ukrainians, who've lost 70,000 troops and then 100,000 civilians to death in this war. This has been a terrible, terrible war, but what it's illuminating is that today's warfare with the era of remote controlled drone strikes and the different ways in which war is prosecuted is very devastating. And also, I think it's in one of those cases, like we talked about with artificial intelligence, there's really no way to kind of put the genie back into the bottle. This is, our warfare will never be the same again. And the United States and the Pentagon are watching this very closely to see, how this what is going on here with the whole era of, you know, cyber, missile, drone, nuclear, biological, satellite attacks, all of these kinds of like non, you know, this is long gone are the days of hand-to-hand combat. This is a war fought with computers and apps, and what we've learned is it's actually per capita more deadly than, you know, going one military force going head to head with another. And, you know, what do we do about it as the United States? Well, Alan makes the case that our defense spending has, you know, declined. Our numbers of material numbers to defend our nation has been sort of declining, as it did before World War One, terrible, down to less than 1%, and before World War Two, when it was very low. And we had, all of a sudden, we had to surge back, and then it became a kind of an economic crisis to catch up fast with huge, military defense spending and building to respond to a crisis in World War One and World War Two. And he uses the example of the Cold War as, you know, the deterrence factor, the deterrence that we kind of created through building up a strong defense during the Cold War sort of prevented war. It did. And now that fewer countries are paying to defend themselves, and the United States is reducing its amount, they're, you know, we're creating a more, you know, kind of war welcoming situation around the planet. So these are big issues, and the Pentagon is definitely paying close attention to it. But, you know, we have problems with our, you know, with having enough end strength in the United States. We have a lack of ships, and, you know, the Air Force is way down in terms of our ability to, you know, to fund it and to actually defend. So the question is, you know, what is the future of warfare, especially as we start to look to, you know, Asia and China and Taiwan and the whole experience situation there. We know that there are different ways to prosecute war, unmanned systems in the modern sort of military warfare platform. And, how war is now not just a matter of locked in some singular place, but can be, you know, executed, prosecuted from anywhere to anywhere in this era. You know, they talked about, you know, the, you know, 21st century, warfare requires, you know, a lot of defense mechanisms, like, you know, mechanical analog backups for digital systems, you know, in case there's a cyber attack, which is, right. You know, we're a threat for that. Infrastructure hardened against an EMP, the electromagnetic kind of attack, which we've talked about on the show. Vaccines, you know, for biological attack, you know, all of these things and different kinds of procedures. I mean, it's just not the era of warfighting that you and I grew up with. And, I've found it pretty stunning that Ukraine purchased or produced 200,000 drones in 2023. And Alan puts it this way, some were as big as planes and others were as small as lunch boxes made of cardboard or plastic. I mean, and the idea that, and their one of their most effective defenses was drones and drone swarms. I don't know about you, but I don't really care to see a drone swarm overhead. this is where, you know, warfare is. We are kind of entering the era of the, you know, the robot wars, the drone wars, and the remote control wars, and how we do. Okay, we've got that problem kind of understood, but, you know, Alan makes the point that, you know, we have to work harder on deterrence. We have to work harder on, you know, the NATO alliance was, you know, has been blamed for, you know, for all of this because, you know, Putin said that because Ukraine wanted into NATO and get protection with the allied nations. You know, at the end of the day, we that kind of relationship, that kind of, you know, alliance prevents these kinds of conflicts. And it,
sure.
we know that, you know, Ukraine, by not having NATO support, if Ukraine had NATO support at the time of Russia's invasion, this war was not ain't happening.
Yeah.
We'd have had that convoy of old Russian trucks that was sitting there with flat tires on the road into Kyiv would have been, you know, a spot in the road now. So, but, you know, Alan goes into, you know, missile defense, intelligence, and what we are ending up spending is so, you know, I think the NATO, aside from this, but, you know, the Western world and the free world is certainly devoting a lot of money, $46.6 billion in military assistance and another $30 billion in humanitarian aid. The United States has already sent, you know, all this money to defend Ukraine. 50 other nations are helping Ukraine. And the EU and, you know, the free world has a stake in keeping this from happening. And, you know, the only way that they can, you know, legitimately do it without breaking NATO rules is to provide humanitarian and military aid. So but we're learning a lot from this. It is very sad to think about all of the people who have, you know, lost their lives in this terrible war, and all of the money that has been spent on, you know, equipment and weapons and that sort of thing, when money could be used to solve other problems, maybe problems like we see in Guatemala villages where they just struggle to feed their families.
It's all contained in the April edition of the American Legion magazine. Alan Dowd authored this one, Lessons from Ukraine. Definitely a must read. All right, Jeff, we're going to leave it on that note. You take care, my friend, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Great. Thanks, Flash. Thanks for having us on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org.
Hey, this is Sean McGarvey, and I'm president of North America's Building Trades Unions, and I'm a proud listener of America's Workforce. I love this podcast.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. You know, Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, loggers, and miners. And in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen their commitment to organized labor. Today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families, all working hard for America's working families, for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, let's go to Washington and join Rich Fiesta, longtime supporter of America's Workforce. Rich serves as executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. It's important you know how your lawmaker votes when it comes to retirement security. And every year, the Alliance comes out with their congressional voting record. Rich, I'm going to start right there. And I know you've been doing this a long time. How many years now for you at the Alliance?
Well, since 2001. So when the AFL-CIO Executive Council created us to be an advocacy force for retirees. So it's been a while.
Okay, long time there. And talk to me about this congressional voting record here. Some people really good, some people really bad. Go ahead.
Exactly. Every year since 2001, Flash, the Alliance for Retired Americans has issued a congressional voting record. We take 10 votes from the U.S. House and 10 votes from the U.S. Senate that impact older Americans and retirees on a wide range of subjects, everything from prescription drugs to Social Security to pension issues, and we rate members of Congress on them, and we keep score, and we keep it cumulatively, and it's quite an easy way to see how your members are voting either for or against the best interest of older Americans.
Any surprises this year on the list?
Actually, no, because the House, and we saw this when the Republicans had the House earlier, is they just vote in lockstep with their leaders, and with kind of the MAGA wing having had control of the House in 2023, there really were no surprises in the sense of you used to have a few moderate Republicans voting with us on our issues. But this year, or 2023, not so much. And expect the same for 24.
Yeah, it seems like the moderates have pretty much altogether quit. They don't want to be part of this anymore, especially in the House. And I'm reading here, 44 members of the Senate, 210 members of the House got perfect 100% scores. And 174 House members earned scores of 0%. Any names you want to shout out here? Who got the zeros? Who got the 100%? Go ahead.
Well, it's you know, as they say in the movies, it's the usual suspects on who's good and who's bad. Just right there in Ohio, of course, Sherrod Brown, in both his House and Senate career, has been with us 100% year over year. I mean, as you know, he was with us and other seniors earlier in the decades on helping us get prescription drugs from Canada cheaper to show that you can do it, and then was one of the leaders with the Inflation Reduction Act to actually bring down the cost of prescription drugs by allowing Medicare to negotiate. So Senator Brown has been in our corner from the beginning, not so much with J.D. Vance, the new senator from Ohio. And he's as ideological in MAGA as he put himself out there during the last campaign. So just one state to lift up as an example.
I gotcha. I see Rick Scott and Ted Cruz are also at zero on that one. And this is all posted on the website, right? RetiredAmericans.org?
Yes, you can find it on our website, not only for 2023, but every voting record going back to 2020 or 2001.
Okay. Retirement security. You want to know how your lawmakers are voting? That's where you get educated. All right, talk to me about Social Security and Medicare. I guess Trump got himself in a firestorm here. He was on CNBC, I believe it was earlier this week, and he said, and this is a quote, "There's a lot you can do to cut Social Security and Medicare." Oh, my gosh. All right. Where are we on this issue here, Rich?
Well, he said what you just said, as they say, right on TV. But this is a pattern. It's not the first time he said that. He said in January of 2020, you know, 4 years ago, when he was over hobnobbing with billionaires at that Davos conference in Switzerland every January, that Social Security and Medicare cuts would be on his agenda for his second term. Well, thank heavens the American people did not give him a second term in 2020, so now he's trying to get one again and saying the same things he did 4 years ago. So nothing new that he wants to cut Social Security and Medicare and the earned benefits we all pay for through our paychecks year after year on the way to what's hopefully a very secure retirement.
Now, there's different ways they can cut. Are we talking about cutting the monthly payments, or I guess they want to raise the retirement age, which essentially is a cut? What are you hearing right now?
Well, all of those are cuts, Flash. If you raise the retirement age, you have to work longer while you're still paying in, so you'll get 2 or 3 years. Right now it's 67 for most workers, and if they raise it to 69 or 70, which a lot of Republicans in the House and Senate have called for, then you get 2 or 3 years of no benefits in your retirement because you had to work longer. So that's obviously a cut. And number two, they've been putting out formulas to cut the way the COLA is determined. So that would be a cut as well. Mm-hmm. And also, if you have outside income, which should be irrelevant to Social Security because it's what you pay in, it's social insurance, and what you get out should be what you paid for, regardless of any outside income as well. So there are many ways that you can cut Social Security, unfortunately.
Oh, boy, that's really scary. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are working because the Social Security is not enough for them. So, my gosh, it's amazing what's going on. Now, you did some polling on this, too, because obviously people are very concerned. Again, we're talking about retirement security, and I see there's some new research from the National Institute on Retirement Security. Can you share any of that with us?
Yes. A fine group that does a lot of good work in retirement policy and pension policy as well had some recent polling that shows the importance of it. We've done polling at the Alliance for a number of years showing regardless of your party, even your age or where you live in this country, people want what they paid for. They don't want the retirement age raised. That's almost 90% of Americans, and don't want benefit cuts. It's just universal across the country.
You know what gets me, and I've said this so many times on the show, you know, the people that want to cut call these entitlement. You're entitled to this kind of thing. You know what? You paid into this. You paid into your pension. You pay into Social Security. Your employer pays into Social Security and Medicare as well. It's not an entitlement. This is something that you invested in. It just blows my mind. I'm sure the Alliance is upset on the way this is being portrayed, but that's just another issue in the media here. Rich, thank you so much for joining us. Rich Fiesta, Executive Director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. You can check them out on Facebook at Retired Americans. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Always great being with you, Flash. Thanks again.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, Adam Keller and the Valley Labor Report out of Alabama and the latest from the bricklayers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.